Okay, welcome. My name is Divine. I'm a resident. This is episode 208 of the Divine Intervention Podcast. And in this podcast, this is going to actually be a short one. I'm going to be talking about transfusion reactions. This is a concept that I'm pretty certain I've discussed in some other podcasts in bits and pieces before, but I just want to have one specifically dedicated to these reactions because these things are commonly tested on exams. And I feel like I've both tutored people recently and just heard from people, many people getting this kind of stuff wrong because the MBME loves to test it because it's somewhat confusing and people do not pay much attention to it. So let's just jump right into it. So there are multiple types of transfusion reactions, right? Like there's the acute hemolytic transfusion reaction. There is the delayed hemolytic transfusion reaction. There is the allergic transfusion reaction. There is the febrile non-hemolytic transfusion reaction. There is something called TRALI, transfusion-related acute lung injury. There's something called TACO, transfusion-associated circulatory overload, right? So those are the six major ones that tend to be tested on the USMLEs. And over the next few minutes, I'm going to break those down, explain to you how exactly how they present on exams so that you can know exactly how they are managed. So basically, the first one, right, acute hemolytic transfusion reaction, basically, the most common cause of this is ABO incompatibility. Essentially, the thing that happens on MBME exams is these people, right? Let's say, for example, you're getting type, let's say you're a type O blood person, right? So you have type O blood. So that means you have antibodies against the A antigen and the B antigen, right? So if, God forbid, for some reason, you get A blood or B blood, right? You already have preformed antibodies against those antigens. When you get that blood transfusion, immediately you start having hemolysis of those red blood cells with those preformed antibodies, and that can cause some pretty significant problems, right? And the most common cause, again, like I said, are clerical errors. That's a high yield thing you want to keep at the back of your mind for these exams. So, acute hemolytic transfusion reaction, how will it present on your exam? Again, it will be like during the transfusion. The patient will start having hematuria, right? The patient will start complaining of back pain or flank pain. So if you see a person during the course of a transfusion complaining of flank pain or back pain and like hematuria, think about an acute hemolytic transfusion reaction. And your diagnostic test on an MBME exam is to go ahead and consider performing a direct Coombs test, okay? A direct Coombs test. A direct Coombs test is essentially really diagnostic for this, right? And remember that this is actually an example of a type 2 hypersensitivity reaction, okay? It's an example of a type 2 hypersensitivity reaction because you have preformed antibodies, again, hemolyzing those red blood cells. Those are examples of, it's an example of a type 2 hypersensitivity reaction. And really, in terms of treatment, really what you typically do is you give a ton of fluid, right? By giving that fluid, all that hemolysis of red blood cells, so it doesn't gunk up the kidneys and cause like acute tubular necrosis or like an intrarenal AKI. Essentially, the thing that happens is that you give a ton of fluid. You know, it's almost like the way you treat rhabdomyolysis in a sense, right? So you kind of like flush away all that badness. Sometimes people that have these acute hemolytic transfusion reactions, they go into DIC. Under those circumstances, you know, you'd want to give them like platelets. You want to give them like cryoprecipitate. You'd want to give them FFP. But other than that, that's pretty much how you manage those disorders, right? So again, the most common cause is a clerical error. Again, that's something you absolutely want to commit to memory. And again, red urine, right? So hematuria, like hemoglobinuria, right? And you'll have flank pain. That's what you're looking for on an MBME exam. Now, a delayed hemolytic transfusion reaction. Basically, the pathophysiology is essentially the same thing as an acute hemolytic transfusion reaction. But the key difference is that the reaction does not occur during the transfusion. It would usually occur like days after the transfusion has happened. That's the classic thing that they tend to put on MBME exams, okay? So the problem arises days after the transfusion has happened. And they will typically, in that Q-stem, give you like a Coombs test result, and you will actually notice that it will be positive, right? So those people will have a positive direct Coombs test, but they will have, again, a hemolytic episode days after the transfusion happened. And the key critical thing there is that those people tend to have much less severe reactions. They tend to have much less severe reactions, right? So they usually do not, you know, it's not something that requires like, oh, gangbusters treatment or anything like that. Their reactions are usually pretty mild, right? So it's also a kind of type 2 hypersensitivity reaction. And again, it happens days after the transfusion happens. And usually, it typically does not arise because of ABO incompatibility. It almost always arises because of some other kind of antigen, like the KID antigen, like the KI double D antigen, or the sometimes you can see like the KEL antigen or the Duffy antigen. Those are kind of like the big things there. So that's all I think I'm going to say about the delayed hemolytic transfusion reaction. Now, the next one I think I want to jump to is the allergic transfusion reaction. This classically shows up on NBMEs in the context of a person that has IgA deficiency. Essentially, the thing that happens is you get a blood transfusion, and when you get that blood transfusion, that transfused blood contains things that you have IgE antibodies against, right? Contains things you have IgE antibodies against. So if you take that transfused blood, you take those antigens, from those antigens, you know, they will react with IgE. You have cross-linking of the IgEs on the surfaces of mast cells, right? And you release those nasty things like histamine and heparin and all that stuff, and that can cause bronchospasm and cause pretty significant problems, right? So those people, the classic presentation will be airway problems, okay? They will have predominantly airway problems, right? So they'll have like bronchospasm, they'll have wheezing, right? They'll have like an anaphylactic style presentation. And typically the thing you do for those people, I mean, if it's a mild reaction, if they're, like they're sitting fine, their blood pressure is fine and everything, you can go ahead and give those people an antihistamine. And then, you know, if they kind of get better, you can then resume the reaction. But if it's like a severe reaction, which I would say for the most part, you should maybe expect more on an NBM exam, you want to go ahead and give those people IM epinephrine because it's literally an anaphylactic reaction, right? And because it's an anaphylactic reaction, or you can say an allergic reaction, essentially the thing that's happening with those folks is it's actually a type 1 hypersensitivity reaction. That's one thing the NBME kind of expects you to know. It's a type 1 hypersensitivity reaction. And think about it, right? Think about this. People that are IgA deficient, right? If the IgA is a foreign molecule to them, right? So if, for example, they get transfused blood and that transfused blood contains IgA, right? Then they probably have like IgE antibodies. Because remember, you know, when you get exposed to an allergen or an antigen the first time, the first antibody you make is IgM. But after you make IgM, there is such a thing as class switching, right? And class switching, especially if you're using interleukin-4, you can class switch to IgG and IgE. Or if you have interleukin-5, you can class switch to IgA, right? So the thing is, if you make IgE antibodies, then you begin to get into trouble, right? And you can get those kinds of problems. And again, because it's an anaphylactic reaction, for the most part, you need to strongly consider putting those people on a IM epinephrine, right? So that they don't pass away. Now, the next one I want to talk about the febrile non-hemolytic transfusion reaction, okay? The febrile non-hemolytic transfusion reaction. Essentially, the febrile non-hemolytic transfusion reaction pretty much can arise by, the way it will present is typically it will be a person that during the course of a blood transfusion, they develop like fevers, right? But, you know, they'll be febrile, they may have like a mild tachycardia, but they won't really have significant hemodynamic instability, okay? They don't really have significant hemodynamic instability. And one key thing to keep at the back of your mind with these are febrile reactions, right, is again, either during the transfusion or, you know, around like 1 to 4 hours after the transfusion is over, okay? That's one thing you absolutely want to keep at the back of your mind on exams, right? And the thing is, this is actually one of those things where understanding the mechanism is very useful for purposes of the NBME exams. Because the thing is, your friends at the NBME, they're beginning to write these questions where they demand mechanistic reasoning, especially on step 2 CK. I mean, step 1, they've been doing it all along, right? But step 2 CK, right? So one thing I would definitely say is, it's probably not the worst idea in the world to understand this. And the reason that I'm going to emphasize the mechanism here today is that there are some very nice parallels with the mechanism behind another kind of transfusion reaction called TRALI. Transfusion-related acute lung injury, right? So let's go ahead and break that down and talk about things, right? So the thing is, when a person has a febrile non-hemolytic transfusion reaction, the thing that happens is there are one of two mechanisms. Let me talk about the easy mechanism and then I'll talk about the hard mechanism. The easy mechanism, which is the first one, essentially revolves around the fact that When you have blood elements, right, especially platelets, platelets are probably one of the big ones that tend to cause this kind of problem, right? Blood, when you, you know, you have blood stored in the blood bank, it can actually contain white blood cells. And those white blood cells, right, especially again, these, the reason I'm saying it's platelets is white blood cells, they survive very well at room temperature. The thing is, platelets tend to generally be stored at room temperature. Most other blood elements are not stored at room temperature. So the thing that happens is if you have platelets, you know, you get a platelet transfusion, and then from those platelet transfusions, those are white blood cells that have been sitting in the blood bank, you know, they are still active. They're still able to make cytokines. Those cytokines, right, can, you know, activate, like, you know, cause fever and all that stuff, right? So, you know, the person will have like fever, chills, some mild tachycardia, nothing serious there. All you need to do for these people is just give them something that reduces fevers, like you can give like acetaminophen, for example, right? And again, these transfusion reactions, I promise you, like on many shelf exams, like surgery, medicine, peds, they love to test all this stuff. So this is something you absolutely want to make sure you understand and keep at the back of your mind for exams. It's just something that they love to test all the time on tests. So that's the easy mechanism. The hard mechanism is that for a febrile non-hemolytic transfusion reaction, the thing that happens is you can have antibodies. So you, the person, right, the recipient of the blood transfusion, right, the recipient has antibodies, and those antibodies, they can attack white blood cells that are present. They can attack white blood cells that are present in the blood that's being transfused, right? And basically the thing that happens is you essentially form an antigen antibody complex. So this is actually an example of a type 3 hypersensitivity reaction. So you form an antigen antibody complex. And the thing is, when those antibodies, right, from the recipient binds to the antigens, which are in the leukocytes of the donor blood, right, you then have a release of cytokines, and then that causes all those problems, right? So the reason I'm being very specific here is that in a febrile non-hemolytic transfusion reaction, I'm saying that the antibodies come from the recipient, and then the antigens on the white blood cells are in the donor blood. That is very different from what obtains in TRALI, transfusion-related acute lung injury, okay? You have the antibodies coming from the donor blood, and then you have the affected leukocytes coming from the recipient's blood, okay? So that's something you absolutely want to keep at the back of your mind for exams, right? So I guess with that said, let me just maybe go ahead and jump to the transfusion-related acute lung injury. The easy way to understand transfusion-related acute lung injury is this is essentially ARDS in a person that gets a blood transfusion. That is literally the easiest way to think about this. It's ARDS in a person that gets a blood transfusion. And again, I essentially already explained, right? You have antibodies in the donor blood attacking white blood cells in the recipient blood. And when you have that, again, antigen-antibody complex come together. So again, that will be an example of a type 3 hypersensitivity reaction. You can release things like histamine, for example. You can release bradykinin. You can release leukotrienes. Remember, those things, especially if you have like an antigen or an antigen-antibody complex that has a great affinity for the lung parenchyma, those things can settle there. And all that inflammation that then happens will subsequently cause like lung damage. You will increase pulmonary vascular permeability, and you have essentially like a non-cardiogenic pulmonary edema. In fact, I can envision your friends at the MBME writing a question where they give you a pulmonary capillary wedge pressure in a person that has TRALI, and obviously that pulmonary capillary wedge pressure will be normal. It will be less than the magic number of 18, okay? It will be less than the magic number of 18, right? Because the person has a non-cardiogenic pulmonary edema. That is something you absolutely want to commit to memory for your exams, okay? Now, the thing is, you may say, Divine, can you maybe give me an analogy that may help me understand this? The thing is, think about it. When a person has like one of these nephrotic or nephritic syndromes, right, we all know that it arises from antigen-antibody complexes. Those antigen-antibody complexes, they go to the kidneys. You know, like some people that, you know, just when they come to a place, trouble comes with them, right? It's kind of like the same thing. You have this antigen-antibody complex. They're like, oh, they may have been formed somewhere completely different. And then they say, oh, you know, let's come to the kidney. Maybe because they have like very good affinity for some kidney antigens, they come there and they trigger chaos, and then they destroy the kidneys, right? So I almost think of TRALI, like if you really dig down to the pathophysiology is almost identical to what happens in the kidneys. It's almost like like one of those nephritic or nephrotic syndromes, but it happens in the lungs because those antigens and antibodies, the antigen-antibody complexes, settle in the lungs instead of settling in the kidneys, okay? So that's the mechanism, that's the pathophysiology behind transfusion-related acute lung injury, okay? Transfusion-related acute lung injury. That's a, again, that's a high yield thing to know. And again, it's essentially like ARDS. So essentially what you want to do for these people is, you know, you want to give them like pulmonary support. Trally has a pretty high mortality, you know, just, you know, pulmonary support. These people may need to be placed on vents. You can give them like, if they are hypotensive, you can give them fluids, you can give them pressors. It's actually very high yield to remember that you don't want to give these people diuretics. Diuretics are a terrible idea in a person that, in a person that has a transfusion-related acute lung injury. In some cases, you could also give these people corticosteroids. So just kind of know those different treatments for trally. Now, the other transfusion-related reaction I think I want to talk about is TACO, right? So transfusion-associated circulatory overload. Basically, this one is almost like, this one is essentially like a person that has like risk factors for like, you know, like bad heart, you know, like heart failure, blah, 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 blah. You give them like a large volume blood transfusion, right? And then they subsequently get into trouble because their hearts cannot handle the fluid. So because their hearts cannot handle the fluid, most of that fluid, the blood from the large volume transfusion, kind of backs up in the lungs. And if it backs up in the lungs, that's a problem, right? Because that will cause pulmonary edema. But unlike trally, which I said was a non-cardiogenic pulmonary edema, TACO is a cardiogenic pulmonary edema, okay? So in this circumstance, the pulmonary capillary wedge pressure will be greater than the magic number of 18. And because this is essentially almost like a fluid overload, right? Then treatment, it would make sense that giving diuretics helps significantly under these circumstances. And one other thing that your friends at the NBME may do to, you know, mildly mess with your head is, if a person has TACO, right, like they may give you like BN, they can give you, I can just imagine them giving you like a chart with arrows, and then they put like the PCWP in one arrow, they put like the central venous pressure in one arrow, they put like the BNP, right, in one arrow, and all those things will go up, right? Remember, the CVP is a proxy for right atrial pressure. It will go up because there's fluid overload in the heart. The heart cannot pump that blood forward, right? And then the PCWP, which is a surrogate for left atrial pressure, will also be increased, right? And obviously, right, the person's BNP will be increased because remember, whenever the chambers of the atria or the ventricles are distended with fluid, right, especially like on a chronic basis, they tend to release a ton of AMP and BNP to try to counter those effects, basically like to almost like shut down the activity of the renin angiotensin aldosterone system so you can get rid of that excess fluid. So that's the pathophysiology and that's the treatment for TACO, right? Now, another thing I want to talk about in terms of transfusion reactions, right? So there's this thing known as a transfusion-associated graft versus host disease. Transfusion-associated graft versus host disease, I mean, it's very bad. The mortality is terrible. Basically, the thing that happens is that you have T cells in the donor blood. They begin to attack like tissue in the recipient, right? That's obviously like super, 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 super bad. Right? That is super, super, super bad. I mean, if I'm not mistaken, the mortality for this is like 90% or like some really high, I'm pretty sure it's at least 90%, right? So it's pretty bad, right? And usually the risk factor is the recipient may be like an immunocompromised person. Maybe this person recently got like a bone marrow transplant or something like that. And typically those people, you know, after they get the transfusion, they'll begin to have fevers, they'll have like a rash. Sometimes they can have like big liver, right? So they have like hepatomegaly, they can have diarrhea, they can have like a pancytopenia, like all their, like their white blood cell count, red blood cell count, platelet count, everything will be low. Just, you know, just badness all around, just badness, badness, badness all around. And you may say, okay, how do you prevent this? Well, the way you prevent this is you use gamma rays to essentially irradiate the person's blood. I mean, irradiate the donor blood, right? So that you don't get into those problems, so that the T cells are killed and destroyed. I mean, basically on an NBME exam, you want to think twice and better know what you are doing, and also in the real world before giving blood transfusions to immunocompromised patients, because things like this can happen. And again, transfusion associated graft versus host disease, there's literally no treatment. The person is almost certainly going to die, right? So you just want to keep those things at the back of your mind. And then one thing I think I want to mention is this whole idea of leukoreduction. Leukoreduction is basically where you try to reduce the number of white blood cells in a donor blood sample. That thing can actually help quite significantly with the febrile non-hemolytic transfusion reactions, because you're essentially getting rid of the white blood cells that can produce those cytokines and give rise to trouble, right? Leukoreduction, right, is also, again, something you can do, if I'm not mistaken, also in people that have had like allergic transfusion reactions, but that I'm not 100% sure of. I would encourage you to look that up, but I'm fairly certain that is true. So I think I've pretty much discussed all the major high yield ones. So I think I'm going to go ahead and pause here. As I do at the end of every podcast, I do offer one-on-one tutoring for many exams, and also large group tutoring for the USMLE Step 1, Step 2 CK, Step 3, Step 2 CS exams, preclinical med school exams, right, third year shelf exams, basically all the shelf exams I tutor for. And then if you're a college student applying to med school, so like an AMCAS application, or a med student applying to residency, so like an ERAS application, I do offer, again, like one-on-one coaching with like rec letters, editing personal statements, editing applications, doing mock interviews. Again, I've worked with tons of people, and the vast majority of people I've worked with have all matched at their first choice. And then I offer these booster courses for Step 1, Step 2 CK, and Step 3, where it's 15 hours for Step 2 CK and Step 3, and it's 20 hours for Step 1. And the long and short of things is I essentially review the must-knows, the high yields for those exams in a very short time frame. I meet with the tutee over a couple of sessions. And again, many people that I've done that with have found it to be extremely helpful. And so if you need details on any of these things, just reach out to me either through the website, or you can send me an email, divineinterventionpodcasts@gmail.com, right? And then if you know a college buddy that needs tutoring for like general chemistry, organic chemistry, physics, biochemistry, histology, physiology, again, I do offer one-on-one tutoring for all those things. So have a wonderful night rest. Thank you for listening to this podcast. Please subscribe to the website. Please subscribe. I have these podcasts now on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, on Google Play. And also, I do have a YouTube channel. It's called Divine Intervention Podcasts and Videos. So please subscribe. Any positive comment, any feedback helps. So I would really beg if you could. And I would, God willing, continue to make these wonderful podcasts and videos. So have a wonderful rest of your night. God bless you. I'll see you in the next podcast. Thank you.